À conversa no cais.
Esta semana fomos até Milão, em Itália, e falamos dos velejadores milaneses, dos irmãos Bruni, do esquife na Austrália. De em 2007, os folhos terem renascido, da primeira Foiling Week em 2013, da resistência dos fãs da America's Cup, da juventude querer folhos, das pessoas estarem cansadas de andar num barco com 40 anos, dos barcos para aprender, Open Beak, 29er, Wasp, de no limite ser uma experiência para o público, de 10 anos ser muito tempo, de uma sede em Génova, do circuito AC40, dos botes baleeiros do Pico, da oportunidade de ir ao leme num bote. O nosso convidado desta semana é o Luca Risotti. Bem-vindos à Conversa no Cais, podcast do LX Sailing. Hoje fomos até a Itália falar com o nosso grande amigo Luca Risotti. Luca, benvenuto e grazie por essere qui con noi a parlare un po' di tua vita e tua passione per le barche. È un piacere parlare con te.
Nostro, grazie a te Rodrigo, molto contento di essere qui con te.
No, Luca, ora andiamo a parlare un po' inglese perché è meglio perché tutta la gente può capire che vogliamo dire.
Of course.
Let's go in English, my friend. So, first of all, it's insane. We start thinking about this podcast in, I don't know, October or something, but at the end we achieved some moment, and I think it's the right moment. It's perfect. So, Luca, first of all, you are completely passionate about sailing. You are not only passionate about foiling, because nowadays everybody relates you to foiling and foiling and foiling, but you are completely fanatic or passionate about sailing. How this started? You come from Milan. You don't have sea, you have lake, but how this started?
Well, Milan, not many people knows, but lots of the, many of the, especially of the ocean sailors that we have, from Giovanni Soldini,
Ferrari Giovanni oggi,
Ambrogio Beccaria, many of the sailors, especially the ocean going sailors, are from Milan. I guess because we live in a big city that doesn't have the sea, we strive to go to the sea and we become sailors. And also the other side, we have the advantage that the lakes and the sea are normally 1 or 2 hours away from where we live. Of course, it would be better to live directly on the sea, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I started when I was 15, 16, doing windsurf in Sardinian beaches. Yeah. Then when I was 18, 19, I started sailing. And I love the complexity of sailing more than, let's say, the simplicity of windsurf, which, I mean, it's fantastic. And I will probably go back and I'm doing wingboard now. So I still like the kind of style. But let's say I then focused much more on the sailing side. And then I was simply lucky because I moved to Australia for work. And and there I met the Bruni brothers, and they basically took me into skiffs, because they were, when I met them, they were in Sydney for the Olympics in 2000. They were 49ers.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's how I really started going fast. Before that, I was going on a very boring old J24 or something like that.
But you never done the classical way, optimist for 20 or whatever.
Nothing. Zero. No.
Zero.
But that's why I'm not. I'm not a really competent sailor. I managed to be okay really in my years when I was doing skiff, because I was sailing a lot.
Yeah.
In foiling, yes, I can manage to go around with a mot, but I'm not a good sailor. A good to be a good sailor, you need to be, you need to spend days and days in the water, which I cannot afford anymore. The passion, though, still put me in the water from time to time.
but since you jump on a windsurf board, you understood that the sea will be your playground, or the water, the sea or the lakes will be your playground, even to have fun and also to generate some work.
Well, in reality, let's say I always been passionate about the sea for sure, and boats and everything. But I spent for now the majority of my professional life not in the yachting or marine world. I was involved in architecture and construction for, let's say, the first 20 years of my professional life.
Wow.
And then I got into... I developed Falling Week, but at the beginning, Falling Week wasn't work, was just passion again. Mm-hmm. And then I started working for PepsiCo. And that was yachting. That was working into the top end of the nautical industry. So that's how I got into it.
But we have some echo. I don't know if you are using a microphone or whatever, or you are too close. But I have some echo from your side.
I can lower the volume. Normally, that
that will be helpful. Thanks so much. But then you said in Australia, with Bruni brothers, you learn about skiffs, the speed and the adrenaline. You understood that will be the next chapter on the sailing industry, because you moved from a common windsurf board at that time to a skiff, and skiff has a lot of it's a Red Bull sailing at that time. You understood that something need to change in the world of sailing.
Well, I think things change in the world of sailing in reality, or naturally, when it's the time. Skiff have been in Australia forever. It's the type of boat, especially let's say the most modern planing hulls. It's something they had since the 50s, 60s. In the 80s, more or less, we started to see them also outside Australia. And then it became an Olympic class, and everybody was then sailing 29ers, 49ers, 18-footers, big fleets, even in the UK. But then the foiling renaissance, that came a little later in 2000, let's say. The real difference was in 2007, when when a world championship in the mod class was won by a foiling mod, which meant that basically there was no way back. At that point, the boat was faster all around the course, and not just slightly faster, significantly faster. So that changed the class, and I think many saw that as really a turning point in sailing. Then, of course, the cup came in 2013-14 with the foiling catamarans in the cup, Team New Zealand being the first. But then I think at that point it was clear to me that a revolution was coming. In 2013, and in fact Foiling Week was born in 2013, and acknowledging that the change was coming and fast.
I remember when people in the world start talking about foils, we have some conservative reaction from old guys said he's not sailing anymore. This is blah 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 blah, and also this too risky, too dangerous. But in nowadays, we don't sink anymore sailing without foils. Until where the foils can go? There's no limit on foils, because we have now the ultimates racing around the world on a single-handed with foils. You have mods, you have wing foil, you have surf guys doing surf on foils.
Well, I think the limit is only given by the transition time. But foiling certainly will get bigger and bigger portions of the system. What I find interesting is that in reality, the resistance to foil mainly comes from the public that looks at the cup, especially because lots of us were watching the cup at the times of Valencia when there were 10, 15, 14 teams. I don't remember how many.
12
races.
Sure, yeah.
I started a little earlier even with Moro di Venezia, Azzurra, and all of this. So we are used to a certain look of the boats. But this is the first line of the public in sailing, the one that wakes up when the cup goes on. But for example, I was noticing this exactly in this race that ultimes are doing around the world on foils. There is not a single person or voice that is saying, hey, but these are not boats anymore.
It's true.
There is no one saying this is sailing or anything like that.
Yeah, even the
same is true for Imoca. So I think this resistance applies only to the people that basically watches the cup every 4 years, which is a lot of public for sure, but it's probably not the most adventurous and sporty out there. The real fans of sailing that follow also ocean going regattas and Olympic are a little less conservative.
Another very important team related to the appearance of foils and all of this thing is when the World Sailing and also especially the International Olympic Committee decided that the regattas on the Olympics need to be shorter on time and with much more adrenaline. I think that was also a key moment on the foiling massification, because it was almost a decision on the Olympic Committee: or you change the sailing, or we don't gonna have more sailing on the Olympics. You think that it was also important, as I believe?
Well, I think it is an important point. Certainly, the massification is more in the board sports. So kite foil, wing foiling, these are really mass sport. Sailing sailing doesn't really have numbers to compare with boards. Not the boards are not sailing. They are, of course, sailing. But the numbers that they get are completely different. And the success of wing foil is due to the ability to be used everywhere, easy transportation. It's even easier than kite because you don't have lines, you don't need to launch perpendicular to the wind, anything. You just go out and that's it. So certainly the Olympic movement helped in getting more foiling out there. But again, I think there is media pressure to do more adrenaline, shorter, more TV times. And sometimes this can be perceived, of course, as a sacrifice to older classes that are more about racing for like 2-3 hours on the Olympic triangle. But time are changing. And what we see is that the majority of young professional sailors, they want to go foiling. When there was when Team New Zealand was thinking, should we go foiling after they won the cup in Bermuda? Should we go foiling again? That was just before coming up to, with the AC75. Mm-hmm. What we understand is that basically the sailing crew, Peter Berlin, Blair Took, and all of these guys, and Glenn Ashby, they basically told them, guys, if you don't go foiling, we don't go sailing with you anymore. So the pressure is not really, I don't think it's really media driven. I think it's community and sailors driven. Of course, the IOC saying shorter, faster adrenaline helps foiling to be represented. But I think it's not really something that comes from above. It's a revolution that comes from the bottom up.
Mm. It's fun because Etienne is like a hippie movement. It came from the crowd and don't start on a board of directors of a think tank guys saying, let's go in this way or that way. It's like a hippie movement. It's come from the common. Yeah, it's really really interesting. And we still in our days seeing foiling growing. I believe that today the foiling industry related with kite, especially with kiteboard and all of that things, it's so much important to bring more people to sailing than the opposite. Because on beginning people are discussing if foiling is sailing, but now the number of people that they are sailing due to the foils and kiteboard or whatever, it grow up a lot of the community of sailing and even open new markets, new companies, new marketing opportunities, new commercial opportunities, and the market for sailing is much more wider than it was before.
Yeah, there is for sure. I would say that especially the newer generations, if WASP and other classes and wing foil and kite foil were not there, it would be probably harder for sailing to keep a position with the youth in the sport world. Having this type of boats and speed and fun. I mean, otherwise, you're competing with, as a sport for the youth, you're competing with skateboard.
Yeah,
you're competing with new sports that are much quicker and more fun and easy to do around than sailing. Mm-hmm. So if you want these people to stay in the sport, certainly you need to offer something that is new. People is tired of going around with the boats that have been designed 40, 50 years ago. I mean, tired to do that on a top-end Olympic racing level. As I mentioned many times myself, if I had unlimited money, the first boat I would buy is a J-Class. So, trust me, I like all boats. But then if I am an athlete, I want to go sailing with the latest kit. Nobody's asking skiers to race with skis made 40 years ago. And I find odd that it's done sometime in sailing.
I believe one of the things that's still missing is a boat that will change the optimist, because it's insane. Because the kids still learning in the boat, even the shape is look like a matchbox, is insane, but. WASP maybe is too expensive.
Open beak is a great skiff, but I don't know. He hadn't moved so fast as somewhere. Sometime I believe that will happen. Do you think that's the gap we need to close?
Well, every boat at some point becomes too old. The Opti has been around almost for 1 million years now. but of course, on the other side, it is relatively inexpensive, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Every club has it. So when something is so established, it's difficult to make a change. The only possibility to make a change is that if somebody from the top says. In this case, it needs to be somebody from the top that says, "Okay, enough." The new boat for the youth at world sailing level will be, I don't know, the open beak or a different one. I don't think foiling, even though there are some foiling boats for kids, I don't think it's a good idea to start foiling from scratch, like skipping. Anything, everything. It just makes sense to learn normal boats before getting into foiling boats.
Yeah. So keep the basics on the beginning. That's your advice.
Say again.
Keep the basics on the beginning of the learning curve of sailing. It's go on open beak or
Something like that, and then I think it's even correct to do some progression on a boat like a 29er when you learn some skiff-like asymmetric sailing, and then after that you can get on a Wasp. That's to me, that would be the ideal progression, like open beak, 29er, Wasp.
Open beak, 29er. Wasp.
If I was a world sailing president, I would say that.
Don't you are not yet. You are not yet.
You are too young to be.
And that's fun. And when you already told us when, but why you started the foiling week?
I don't know.
It's not rocket science. It's again a hippie movement.
It's again passion. At the time in 2013, I have already organized. I was president of the Italian Moth Class, so I have already organized the Moth Worlds in Garda by then. And what we saw in 2013 with the Cup. Was that you could go foiling with very big catamarans, 72 feet. And at the same time, we could go foiling with 11 feet monohulls. And it was only a matter of time that everything in between would go foiling. And that's exactly what happened. But what we wanted to do was to come up with an event that would serve the purpose of accelerating foiling. So that's why Foiling Week has never been just about racing, but we always had trials, conferences, discussions, initiatives. It's always been something, I would say, quite complex as an exercise to make sure that the community would get together and push forward the system.
At the end, it's a trend.
Yeah.
It's a trend. It's like Coachella Festival. It's a trend of music and fashion and design and concept. Foiling Week, it's a trend. Or now it's where you test, try to understand, you have new products and new ideas, new concepts.
I think it's at the end of the day, it's a good mix, because we see companies coming and presenting new projects, new products, and so on. And at the same time, we see which is what we like a lot. We see participation of weekend warriors, people that just go sailing for fun, but also we see the professionals that come from the CAP and CGP simply because small boat foiling is fun and they just want to do it. And that's a place where, if you come to Lake Garda, it's certainly a place where you can have a lot of fun with foiling boats. So it's just a good recipe that people like.
This year, you're probably going to have some lovely Portuguese guests there. And what kind of experience you can provide to someone that imagine someone knows the sea but is not a top sailor. If someone goes to Garda to the foiling week, what kind of experience he can have?
The offer is quite wide in terms of experience that you can have. Let's say the most basic experience you can have is to just be a part of the public. So from land, you can see what happens in the water, and that's probably the best spot in Lake Garda because the boats, they come tacking 5 meters from the shore. So it is very, very easy to see what happens on the water. Next to it, you can try a boat, and we have many manufacturers and sailing schools that give the opportunity of trying foiling boats for the very first time, so beginner level. So we do that with the assistance of RIBS and coaches, so safe and controlled. Not only boats, but we also have wings, electric foil board, everything that foils. At the end, foiling week is not only about sail racing, but it's about everything that foils. So we even have foiling motor boats if you want to experience foiling in a different way. And then we have coaching classes for the classes where we normally have, let's say, coaches that are the best out there. What I mean by that is, in the past, we had Tom Slingsby, Paul Goodison, Checco Bruni that have really donated their time to the foiling community by being coaches for one day or two before the events. And that's that is what makes this event special again. That's people likes to be together with other passionate people about foiling.
So at the end, if you are passionate about sailing and you want to try foiling or understand, or if you already foil, you want to see what you can do, you just go there and
be part of. Another very important thing is that it's not about exclusivity, but inclusivity. Doors are open. Just walk in, come and see us. Easy.
It's not a closed nautical club. It's an open door event. Completely.
It's an open door event. Correct. You don't pay a ticket to see the races. Just come. That's what we want.
And have fun. How many people you have in last year's?
Last year it was a big event because it was the 10th anniversary. All up, I think we had more or less 600 sailors, and public is hard to say in the thousands.
It's insane. It's magical. Yeah. It's pure magical. And what will be the next? What do you expect when you do when? In 9 years, we're going to have the 20th anniversary of Foiling Week.
Oh, my God. I'm not thinking about that.
No?
I just need to tell you. Give me some rest. We'll see. One year at a time, just moving forward and delivering every year what the community wants to have.
It's lovely. It's really magical.
Well, it's fantastic. Even if we look back at the 10 years ago, which in sailing terms is nothing, the foiling has completely changed in these last 10 years. When we started, the only classes that were really racing were the mods and the kites. We had some very initial GC32s. The Wasp wasn't even launched. There were lots of prototypes because there were still people building foiling boats in the garage. Now we have to limit the number of classes that come at foiling week because we don't have space and, on water and on land. Every year we have more or less 7-8 classes that come, and that's already at the limit of what is possible. And certainly the club Fraglia Vela is doing an amazing job by running at the same time. We basically have 4 courses with 1 or 2 classes in each course. It's impossible to do anything more than that, really.
I know you have shared news that now you're going to have a foiling week headquarters in Geneva.
It's not really foiling week headquarters. It's going to be foiling organization headquarters.
Foiling organization.
The organization is beyond foiling week. Foiling week is an event. The foiling organization is the association of the industry and the professionals of foiling. And that's the one that is going to have an headquarter in Genoa. The idea is to put together, let's say, a cluster of industry and technologies and try to have a place in the world that is the capital of foiling and the foiling research and everything else.
It's a B2B, it's a business-to-business area.
Yeah, yeah, it's B2B. Totally B2B.
And Foiling Week is B2C completely.
Foiling Week, Foiling Week is B2 everything. We have we certainly have some B2B features, but it's really made for the public and the sailors.
Yeah, really cool, really cool. Look, changing a little bit. Keep on filing, but changing a little bit. You are at the end of one of the also. You are also at the end of one of the next big things. It will be the AC40 circuit. It's myself have enormous expectations on that circuit because first of all the boats are incredible. It's outstanding sailing machines. Yeah. And the counterpart of that is that boats or those concepts that had been patronized and sponsorized by very wealthy people, that the boats that they create become so complex they cannot sail them anymore on America's Cup and so on. So but this circuit will be a back to roots. So those men, those wealthy men that put some money to create those boats, can return and sailing on those boats again.
Yeah, that's the idea. We have let's say that the circuit is an open circuit. Which is, of course, based on the participation also of teams that are currently sailing in the America's Cup. In these teams, some of the owners of the teams will participate as, let's say, owner drivers in the circuit. And what we see is that we already have more than the interest. We have the deposits to buy some AC40s from private owners, of course, that are involved in other, let's say, yacht racing classes, but also professional teams that want to go and compete and, let's say, get into America's Cup with, let's say, an easy access where they can prove themselves and from then on perhaps try to go and find the funds to run a full America's Cup campaign. But of course, starting with something that is significantly lower in terms of financial impact. I mean, it's by all means, it's not cheap to have and run an AC40, but compared to the Cup, it is a lot less.
Today, how many boats you expect to have on the circuit?
We think we're going to have 7-8 boats from the current teams. Three, four boats from private, from new private owners, and three, four boats from new professional teams. That's more or less it.
You can have 12 to 14 boats racing.
12 to 16 boats racing, yeah.
Six, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Wow. That will be, wow, I can't imagine. It's something.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned too. We will see. Of course, there will be. We will need to split fleets at some point. Yeah. We cannot run AC40 regattas with 16 boats on the start line, but we'll find a way to manage and do different flights, of course.
With that numbers, the reaction of the market to that circuit was great, because if someone tell me 2 years ago that someday we'll have 14 to 16 AC40 doing regattas.
14 to 16, not 40 to 60.
No, 14 to 16. Yeah. No.
I don't
14
want you to be
16.
Too optimistic.
No.
No, 14 to 16.
Okay.
It's insane if someone tell me, oh, yeah.
It's a good number. It is certainly a good number.
It's a great number. And it will be a worldwide circuit. Where are you going to focus?
I would say that we aim to run the majority of the races in year one in the Mediterranean, because the majority of the owners and teams are based there, with a strong possibility that we do also one race in the United States at the end of the season.
Okay. That's great. The crew will be four.
The crew will be four, correct. The America's Cup teams, they will have a limit to two sailors from the actual Cup team. The other two, they need to pick from their own youth and women America's Cup team.
And the non-America's Cup teams?
The non-America's Cup team, they have the owner drivers for year one have no limit, so potentially they can sail with three America's Cup sailors. The professional sailing teams, they still have the same limit. So maximum two.
It will be like SailGP a today event, or will be a more
No. It's a different proposition. We will go for I would say 5 to 6 events per year maximum, and the events will be 4 days long. Let's say racing wise.
Sunday to Sunday or something like that, or Wednesday to Friday.
Yeah, something like that, with 1 or 2 days where you do set up, practice racing, let's say the normal thing that you do in classes like TP52 or C44. That's what you do in this kind of class.
Almost 1 week event.
Let's say it's a more or less a 1 week running and setup, but the sailing team or the owner driver can come only for 4 days.
Okay. That's great news. That's a hell of a project. Congratulations, you are doing.
Let's see if we deliver first. But thank you.
No, you are pushing. You are trying, and the numbers are there. You have achieved so many things that you don't gonna miss this one. Another lovely story. I had been the pleasure to invite you and a couple of friends to Açores to
yeah. to Pico, and you discover the world of the former, not former, the whaleboats.
The whaleboats, yeah.
Now they are used for sailing, for rowing, to
yeah.
and they help kids to start sailing and make them better people. We had been together in October in Pico. After 4 months after, now what are your feelings about that community, that people, that island, those boats?
Well, it was an incredible experience. I think we were lucky to be given the opportunity to look at something that was so important and emotional for a community like that, that is still living today. I think everyone that is sailing in these boats today is doing an amazing job at keeping alive a very rich heritage that they have. The people that we met are all fantastic people. Philippe, of course, being the main ambassador of it, yeah. but we really felt welcome everywhere we went there. Yeah. And the place is just fantastic. What can you say? I mean, yeah. It's an incredible island. It's an incredible
and
island.
And it's fun because Philippe built his own foil to yeah. do windsurf
yeah.
with foils.
Yeah, yeah.
There, he built there. It's funny because on that trip we moved to a boat builder. That he still built. Old man is still building. Mestre João still building whale boats. And
yeah.
10 minutes after, we are on a barrack with a guy doing eye hand things on carbon and it was
yeah.
we moved to from the late 19th century to 21st century in 5 minutes. It's completely incredible.
Yeah. An incredible combination of things in that island for sure. Incredible. And we look forward to do things with them at Foiling Week.
Yeah, yeah. That's we don't talk too much about that.
No, of course. That's why I only give a hint.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing more.
Yeah. But one of the things that surprised me, when you were helming, we had been on same regatta, we were done the regatta on same boat. You Philippe, myself, the Hawks, the big boy, and yeah. two kids. We are on same. And when we lose to your wife, to Petrina, that's a very critical.
This part from the recording, you need to cancel. You know that.
No. And I remember when Philippe changed and he said you're gonna helm the next one.
Yeah.
Your face, it's like a kid at a candy store.
Yeah, of course. But because these boats are amazing. I mean, to be given the possibility of helming one, and with such an experienced crew like Philippe. And the others that we had on board, it was fantastic. It's these are amazing boats. They're very lively. They're not slow by all means. And the place where we were, I mean, it's just perfection. I think, but at the end of the day, it was the whole community showing up there, feeling us that it was. Making us feel it was a once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. So, Luca, my friend, it's
always a great pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much
for your time. We'll catch up in a nearby future when
we will have more news to share.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for your time, Luca. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
E assim chegamos ao final de mais um A Conversa no Cais. Para a semana, como habitualmente, cá estaremos com novos convidados.